Union Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good evening, Bahamas. This is The Urologist Speaks with Bahamian urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto. I'm pleased to have my co-host again, Mr. Calvin Green, who is a veteran of the hotel industry. He's also a church leader and a youth leader. Welcome, Mr. Calvin Green.
Thank you, Doc. Welcome.
And our guest of honor is a national icon, a Bahamian through and through, Pastor Dave Burrows. So I'll say I've traveled the world, and anyone in innumerable times I've been told, from Europe to United Kingdom to Africa, I've been asked, where are you from? I say the Bahamas. The most common thing is first Miles Monroe, next Pastor Dave Burrows, next Sidney Poitier. So we have a living legend amongst us. I think we don't give him enough platitudes. I think other countries actually have him in greater value than our own people, which is a travesty. But we're here to learn and garner from the great Pastor Dave Burrows. Welcome, Pastor Dave Burrows.
Always a pleasure to be here.
So we're going to talk a lot. We're going to talk about the meaning of life, the search for the purpose of life. We all strive or should strive to live a purposeful life. Father's Day is on Sunday. We're going to talk about the importance of fathers in our society and the impact on our society of absent fathers and neglectful and abusive fathers. And we'll even ask the question, which one is worse? But even before we get into what is really the meaning of life, we're going to also talk about, we're going to herald Dr. Pastor Dave Burrows and putting out yet again another book. I don't know how you have the time, sir. But you have a very interesting read. The book is named Leaving the Streets, and it's a book about breaking free from street life and building a future of purpose and success. And you are very forthcoming in your history of coming out through the streets as well. So I think a lot of men see hope in you. Tell us a little bit about what inspired you to write this book, and what is this book about, Pastor Burrows?
So basically, a few years ago, myself, Eric Fox, and Carlos Reed, we launched a program called Reaching the Streets. And the idea is to reach out to the young men who are caught up in the streets and to help them find a way out. The first project was something that was directed towards the people who work with young people. This project is directed at the young people themselves. So, you know, teenagers in school, guys in their 20s and so on. This book is a guide as to how to get out of gang life, street life, how to get out of criminal involvement, and how to find a better way. And what we do in this book is take the examples of a number of young persons in the Bahamas who've made a successful transition. So one of the young men in this book ended up getting, I think, about 50 years in prison in Atlanta. And he was able to make a change. And through the grace of God, he got a pardon. And now he is he's a counselor. He's a specialist, another young man. Today, he was involved in the street life as the director for what's the name of that school? The Simpson Penn School. What we used to call the Boys Industrial School. And, it's just a number of examples of persons who have made a successful transition to show young people that it's possible. And if you want a way out, this is a guide, because a lot of times we tell young, you need to get out of the gang, you need to get out of the streets, but there's no one offering a guide and say, here's how to do it, and here are some people who have done it. So, so basically, that's the gist of what the book covers. So it's a lesson on how to get out of gang and street life and into a more purposeful existence.
Well, obviously, we need more stories of inspiration where men of all ages, boys, have turned the life from darkness to light. And when you're in the midst of it, it's difficult to see any other way. When your father, your cousins, your big brother, your uncles, your grandfather are all in a gang, and that's all you know, the entire community is a gang, and you are basically raised to be a part of that gang. That's the only love, only fellowship, the only acceptance that you have. It's difficult to see any other way or any other purpose in life. How do we reach those sorts of persons where, you know, that's all they know?
Well, that's what this book is all about. So basically, what happens when you're on the streets, inevitably, you come to a point where you say to yourself, this doesn't make sense, and you are looking for a way out. The problem is that for a lot of young men, they may start to try to find a way out, but there's not a clear path, and so they end up back in the position that they were before. I always tell the story. I remember, you know, when I was on the streets, I remember saying to myself one day, you know, this doesn't make sense. I'm not doing this anymore. I'm going to stop using drugs and so on. And I remember I went home, and for a weekend, I stayed home. I didn't smoke. I didn't hang out. But after a few days, I was like, I don't have any friends. What do I do? Just be here by myself all the time. I can't just find new friends and say, okay, I got some new friends. And so I went back to where I was used to, you know, and that's how it is a lot of times. So a lot of times people don't know that there is a pathway out, and then they don't have a guide.
And do you think that in your life story, if you never went off to college and met the persons that you did, you think your life would be what it is now? Do you think if you had stayed in the Bahamas, stayed in your community, stayed with the gangs, that you would have found a way out?
Well, it wasn't even college. It wasn't college, because I always say this. I said, you know, education is good, but education doesn't deliver you from sin.
Yes.
And so when I went to college, my intention was to do better. But because I grew up in an environment of trouble, trouble found me. And so while I was in college, you know, I was facing my worst case scenario, because, you know, I had been in some scrapes in Nassau, been in police chases, all kinds of stuff. But when I went to college, they actually arrested my friend, and they were going to charge us collectively. I didn't get arrested. They were looking for me, but I didn't get arrested. They arrested him, and they were going to charge us with stuff that would equate to about a minimum of 3 years in prison.
Wow.
You know, so I went to college, but it still didn't make a difference. What made the difference for me was, I believe, being around a mentor who had a lifestyle, who had values, and who was able to provide me an example that helped me to see better. I knew better, but it was just difficult. But being around him, so this young man, he was a basketball player. I was a basketball player. So when I went to the second college that I went to, we started playing basketball together. Bible studies, and, you know, he would go to church and so on. And he would just ask me, he'd say, you know, why don't you come to me to Bible study? So I went to Bible study, and I got exposed to the gospel in a way that I hadn't seen it in Nassau. So I started to hear people talk about their testimonies, lives change, people are doing good, you know, prospering, having a good life. And I started to think about it, and I started to think about my life and where I was going. And I didn't decide to make a change initially, but through his influence and seeing his life, it provided an example for me, and eventually I made that change, and that was the beginning of the turnaround for me.
Well, your life is inspirational to a lot of persons, but Calvin Green, you are actually in the trenches. You are mentoring on a regular basis 9-year-olds, 10-year-olds, 11, 12-year-olds. What is life like for a lot of young men in this society right now, and what are the obstacles that they're facing?
Well, my observation is, in dealing with young men that age, I say that, first of all, they come from a lot of what I call, and Pastor Dave might, because I wanted to ask him about this, is a lot of troubled homes, a lot of homes that have challenges in terms of not being able to give the proper guidance, direction, not being able to feed these young men properly, to groom them in a way that gives them social graces, how to behave, how to perform, and how to be young men. And so when you have a situation like that, it is very easy for them to end up in gangs and to go into ways that become what I call antisocial behavior that society that we see every day. And we have too much of that right now in my mind, and from what I see and going into my school with my discussions, we have a lot of young people that are just going in the wrong direction.
Reckless, with no purpose. Yeah. You can go.
But I wanted to ask Pastor Dave, what do you find in is the common thread? We talk about getting in, getting out, but getting in. I mean, does it have anything to do with your social background, or you live in Lyford Key, or a great neighborhood, or a poor neighborhood? What do you find is the common thread that causes that?
I think it's environmental trauma. So let's say, for example, you grow up in Bayonetown. We are close to Bayonetown. You grow up in Bayonetown. All around you, there's trauma. So it's hard to escape. So this is your native environment. And so the person who is not exposed to that type of trauma, they have options. The person who grows up in that environment, they have to find options, and somebody has to pull them out. So it's almost a natural tendency to get involved in the streets, because that's what's around you. If you are not involved in the streets, you become ostracized. You know, in regular society, you get points for good behavior. On the streets, you get points for bad behavior. So bad behavior is incentivized. So if you are a killer, if you are a drug dealer, you get extra points. If you are a good young man, you go to Sunday school and you get good grades, that's considered a negative. So that's the challenge that, you know, young people grow up in that environment. And then in a lot of cases, you don't have a family structure. So you have a lot of young men who are growing up, there's no father, or the father isn't present. And so the role models that they have to look up to are the guys on the streets. And that's what people are attracted to. If you see somebody in the neighborhood, they have a nice car, they have a lot of girls, you know, they have a lot of fame, you get attracted to that because that's the only thing that you see. You know, if you saw young men who are prospering, who are doing well, who are family men, then you get attracted to that. But yeah. You will probably be what you see. If you never see it, you probably won't be it.
What do you think, Father, the role of the illegal migration over the decades in the Commonwealth of Bahamas has on this antisocial behavior by boys and young men, and them entering into the gang life? We'll look at example of persons, young to a mother and father who are here illegally, whether they're Haitian or Jamaican or otherwise, and they feel like they're on the fringe of society, that they're unwanted, that they really don't have a national identity. Although they were born in this country legally, they're not Bahamians until they attempt to apply for legal status as a Bahamian at 18 years old. So they can't even travel. They when they want to go to the College of the Bahamas or now the University of the Bahamas, they can't because they're illegal. So to feel like you are on the fringe of society, you develop this mantra of being antisocial, that you are against society that doesn't want to accept you. What do you think the role of that is in our gang life? Do you think a lot of our gangs are overwhelmed, or the majority are, from persons of illegal descent?
You have a mix, but the number has been growing for years of young men from Haitian descent, particularly who are involved in gang activity. I don't know if you're familiar with the Zopan, but the Zopan kind of popularized Haitian gangsterism, and Zopan is present in the Bahamas. And a lot of the gang members, but it's not just Haitians, there are a lot of Bahamians who are involved too, but you have Haitian involvement, and a part of that can be the social disenfranchisement. A part of it is kind of survival. When I've spoken to a number of Haitian young men, they said, you know, they get ridiculed, they get picked on because they're Haitian. You know, sometimes guys would say to me, you know, the Bahamians would say to them, say, man, you just come off the boat, you can't even speak English. And so then there's this kind of intimidation, and then they are reacting to the intimidation, and so they're coming together for protection. And then the streets are lucrative. You know, you can make money from gang activity. You know, a lot of gangs nowadays revolve around drugs and other enterprises. So, you know, it's a mix. And then a lot of times, you know, without strong fathers in the home or fathers who are role models in the home, there's very little for them to be instructed on how to be a man. And that's probably the major thing that's missing in the Bahamas right now. Mm-hmm. And that is young men understanding what it is to be a normal man.
Yeah. Pastor Barros, with you and what I call your intelligence on the streets, would you say right now that there are a lot of gangs still in our country, still operating?
Absolutely.
Wow.
When you see all of the stuff that's happening in the news, if you go into schools, you'd find that there's a tremendous amount of gang activity. Sometimes in schools, you have bathrooms divided by gang affiliation. You know, so if you are part of one gang, you can go to this bathroom, and another gang go to this bathroom. You can't go to this bathroom if you're from one gang or the other, you know? So there's a lot of gang rivalry going on, fight over territory, fight over drugs, retaliation, killing. So the gang activity in the Bahamas, I don't know the accurate statistics, but it's pretty high. Wow.
And we have a overwhelming number of, I say, revenge killings. And it's a failing of the judicial system where we don't have the manpower, we don't have the financial means. We have a system that is on its knees. How can we arrest 120 murderers, 100 murderers every single year and put them before the courts and try them with a jury every single year? It's just not possible. It's absolutely not possible. So these criminals know that they're going to get off on bail for 9 months, mm-hmm. after being in jail, and 5 years afterwards, the case may never come about. You intimidate witnesses, so there really isn't any justice. That's why there's so many seek street justice. So persons that never thought they had any violence in them, never had any anger, but you go and kill your mother or grandmother or shoot their brother, even as a innocent bystander, these people are going to react. And the system itself doesn't provide justice. Life really has little meaning, which is a very dangerous trend.
Yeah, I think it's about national will as well. You know, so they have a saying that many of us remember growing up. It said, where there's a will, there's a way. You know, I don't know if you're familiar with what happened in El Salvador. It's an extreme example. But basically, El Salvador had the highest murder rate in the entire, probably, Western Hemisphere. Gangs were basically running El Salvador to a certain extent. The president who came in, Bukele, I think that's his name, he decided that he was going to get rid of gangs. So he built a massive prison. And if you were involved in gang activity, he'd lock you up. And so they have a prison like with 50,000 gang members. And the murder rate, I don't remember exactly what it was, but you can Google it. Let's say the murder rate was 3,000 murders a year or 5,000 murders a year. Today, the murder rate is like 30 or 40. Now, it's very extreme because, you know, he doesn't... It's like in the U.S. they have the RICO laws, but this is beyond the RICO laws. So they don't have to convict you of a crime. They just have to certify that you are gang affiliated and they put you in prison. Now, that's an extreme measure. But when we talk about what's happening in the Bahamas, you know, you have to determine what you can live with, what you can't live with, and when are we going to do something to really curb what's happening, you know? So,
well, you know, I always say extreme times require extreme measures. And is at your observation, and as you talk about prison life or prison in El Salvador, when you look at our prison, do you think we do enough to stop recidivism and to help young men to not want to go back to prison through our programs and what we offer them so that they can't go back? I mean, do you think we do enough there to help to stop that?
I know that there are attempts being made. I understand right now the government has commissioned for a new prison to be built. And I think that's good because the focus of that prison is more on rehabilitation. You have better facilities. And I think that's important. You know, it's important for us to treat people humanely, provide proper living conditions. Our prisons are really terrible. I mean, the Fox Hill is really terrible. So I think that plays a part. But there has to be a concerted effort and a program and several programs in place that focus in on prison becoming a developmental tool as opposed to a cage.
Yes.
And it seems like it's very slow in coming. But I noticed that there have been plans on the way to move more towards proper rehabilitation rather than just incarceration.
Well, the problem with Fox Hill is even if you weren't a member of the gang, in many cases you must join a gang just to survive. And that's the only thing to survive, to get out.
Absolutely.
And you got to do what you got to do. And many times that means joining a gang. Or those who were simple petty criminals, by going in Fox Hill, after 4 years, like 4 years of college, you go to the University of Criminality. So you know and learn how to be a super criminal. And that happens more and more and more. So you go in with petty crime, and then you come out a master criminal.
Yeah, that's very common. And prisons are divided. No matter where you go, prisons are divided based upon gang affiliation. You just can't put people from different gangs in the same area. So they have to divide the prison up. And that's what's happening here in the Bahamas too.
Well, a lot of why men, young men, join gangs is because they have no purpose. They're aimless. They see no future. They don't know what is the meaning. So let's look at the greater picture. What would you describe? What would you describe as the meaning of life? What is the purpose of our life on this earth, Pastor Dave Burrows?
Well, I always say this. We have to discover who we are because there's only two ways to live. You either live by instinct or you live by purpose. Animals were designed to live by instinct. Humans were designed to live by purpose. Until you discover your purpose, you live by instinct. So a lion or a dog wakes up in the morning and they have no agenda. It's just survival. So they are living by instinct. And instinct says, okay, there's a deer over there, run behind it and eat it. Humans are actually in the sovereign class, the only creature in the sovereign class. All of the other creatures in the world, they do not govern themselves. They live by instinct. Humans have the capacity to live by purpose. We can actually govern ourselves. We can self-rule. So we can decide whether we're going to steal or not. We can decide whether we're going to cheat or not. The animals don't have that capacity. They just live by instinct. So to me, purpose is when you discover God's original design for your life. Yes. So I didn't know who I was. I was living on instinct. And the result was what you see, you know. You know, when I was growing up, I started getting in trouble, you know, police chases, all kinds of stuff, you know, the streets, street activity. And I had, when I was in high school, I think when I was about, let's say, 14 or 15, I had 6 girlfriends, you know. When I was a young man, when I was about 16, I had married women who used to pay me. They paid to see me. So, you know, call me up and say, hey, you know, let's go out this weekend. I say, well, how much money you have? And that's how I was living. I was living on instinct, you know. And every weekend, you go to the clubs. I was going to clubs since I was about 14. And I would go in all of the clubs in Nassau. And at night, on the weekend, you go from club to club, and you're just looking for women. So that's instinctive living. That's... There's no self-governance in that. There's no purpose, no meaning. You're just living by instinct. But when I discovered my purpose, then I regulated my life. And I said, okay, a part of God's purpose is for me to have a wife and a family. And when I started living by purpose, then life got a lot better. I stopped getting in trouble. You know, it eliminated most of my problems, and I began to live a happy, productive, successful life. And I think that's what people need to understand. What is God's original purpose for us? What is His plan? God never planned for man to be in a cage. So if you're in a cage, it means that you are living outside of God's plan. You're living by instinct. You know, animals get trapped in cages. And if you are living like an animal, that's what happens to you, you know. But if you live on purpose, you can have a beautiful, productive life.
Pastor Dave, you know, let's get to the what I call the crux of when you talk about purpose. Do you discover this on your own, or with the help of your father, or somebody, or a mentor, as you mentioned, somebody who guides you into that space? You just find it on your own, or someone helps you to guide you to that?
Well, I think you definitely don't find it on your own.
Yeah.
It may be in you. So all of us have a God consciousness, you know, and we basically kind of know what's right and wrong. But until somebody helps you to connect the dots, you can have a feeling of, boy, you know, I should do better. But then you haven't connected the dots as to how to do better. So, for example, I remember for me, you know, I used to be doing all kinds of things, and sometimes I'll say to myself, man, I need to change, you know, and I feel guilty for something I did. And I remember my mother used to say to me, she said, boy, the kind of stuff that you are doing, there's a curse on your life. You know, if you're in the streets, the drugs, and so on, particularly selling drugs and so on, she said, there's a curse on your life. Now, at the time, you're not really thinking about it. But then when you get in trouble, you start to think, you know, and so you have to have people who are kind of guides in your life to help you to connect the dots. When I got in touch with the young man, the guy who was the basketball player, he helped to steer me in the right direction. That's the direction I wanted to go in, but I didn't feel comfortable going in that direction because none of my friends were going in that direction. In fact, I stopped going to church when I was about 11 because on the streets, going to church is for soft people. So I didn't go to church. You know, church was something for soft guys. It wasn't until I ran into somebody who helped me to connect the dots that connecting with God was related to my purpose and it would actually be beneficial for my life that I was able to realize that and then take advantage of it.
When I like to think about the meaning of life, I like to think about the thought-provoking story of the fisherman from Abaco. So the story goes, a successful businessman from America visited Abaco many years ago on vacation, and he was taken on a fishing excursion by a local Bahamian fisherman. So the American businessman asked the Bahamian fisherman, how does he spend his day? How does he spend his time in life? So the Bahamian fisherman says he has a very joyful, peaceful, tranquil life. He fishes for a living, which is the greatest joy of his life. Usually he goes fishing with his cousins, his brothers, his best friends in the world. He fishes about 4 to 5 hours a day, and then he comes home and he cooks the fish with his wife. He's out of the boat in time to pick up his kids from school, and he spends time with his children, helping them with homework. After dinner, he goes on a walk at sunset with his wife where he has meaningful talks with his wife. He comes home and he reads with his children and talks to them about their day, and they all pray as a family before they all go to sleep, and then he wakes up and he goes again, and he said every day is a joy. So the American businessman said, you're wasting your life. You can do so much more with your life. You can be fishing 6 days a week. You could be fishing and making much more money if you were to be fishing from sunrise to sunset. You can have multiple boats. You can employ a whole slew of other young men and other men in the community to work for you. And he said, then what? And then you can use that money to possibly open up a local cannery, a fishing cannery, and then you can export fish and create an industry in itself. And then you can go and create a cannery maybe in Florida, and then you can do international exports. And then he said, then what? Then you can make millions of dollars. You can let your company become incorporated. Then you can sell it for millions of dollars. And he said, how long would all that take? Maybe 20, 25 years of your life working hard, working the grind, sacrificing, maybe never seeing your family. But it's worth it in the end. He said, what do you get in the end? Well, then after all that, you'll be free to retire in the Bahamas. And you can fish all you want. You can walk on the beach at sunset with your wife. You can spend time with your family and not worry about anything. And that's what he started with. So I guess the moral of this behind the story is that too many of us spend our lives consumed with chasing a dream in life in pursuit of happiness instead of recognizing the value and happiness already in our lives.
Absolutely. And I remember that story. I heard that story a few times, different versions of it. But it's the truth, you know. I mean, what was interesting about that story is that the guy who came to the Bahamas, or as I heard sometimes they had it in Mexico, he came on a vacation and he rented a place by the beach, and that was pleasure for him. That was a great thing for him. And this guy who he met was already there, and then he's telling the guy all of these things he needs to do to get where he is, and he's already there, you know. So that was quite interesting.
I think in life, it has no meaning in itself. You have to give meaning to your life, asking various questions, very introspective questions, such as know who you are, a question of the source of your very being, or why are you here on earth, a question of purpose, or accomplish in life. That's a question of your abilities. Or where do you want to go in life? And that's a question of destiny. So after knowing all the answers to these questions, you can set clear goals and set a pathway for you to achieve them in life. It gives you a purpose.
Yeah, so basically, Dr. Monroe used to talk about the five questions that everybody needs to answer. And these questions will direct you to your purpose. So the first one is, who am I? And, you know, when you think about it, you are not your name. So if somebody looks at you and they say, well, who are you? And you say, I'm David. No, there's a lot of Davids in the world. You're not David. There's something behind the name. So you have to discover, who am I? Then you have to discover, where am I from? And if you think that you are from Baintown or you are from Shirley Street or whatever it is, you haven't discovered who you really are. Because you are actually from heaven and you are living on earth for a season and a time. And then the next question is, what can I do? And that is that relates to your potential. And so basically you have to identify what has God placed in you. And it speaks about your potential. So for example, if let's look at somebody like Usain Bolt. If he asked himself the question, what can I do? Okay, he was given a gift of running. So that's an indicator of his potential. So you figure out, who am I, where am I from, what can I do? And then the next question is, where am I going? You know, if you go to the airport and you go to check in for a flight and they ask you, okay, what's your destination? And you say, I don't have a destination. Well, you can't really go to the airport because you don't know where you're going. And there are many people in life who are checked in for a flight that they don't know where they're going to.
Well, you know, I grew up, when I was a young fellow, I grew up in West Street, or what they called Baintown. And I was exposed to a lot of things that were what I call antisocial, or you would not be a part of. But one of the things that I recognize is that I knew what I did not want to be. I knew I didn't want to be a drug addict. I knew I didn't want to be an alcoholic. I knew I didn't want to beat a woman. And there were so many things that I knew that I did not want to be, that put me in the direction where I wanted to be in terms of who I am today. And sometimes as you grow up, you have to have some sort of ability to discern in life what is best for you, mm-hmm. which direction you want to go in. And I use that because I knew what I did not want to become. I didn't want to be alcoholic. I did not want to sell drugs or be any of those things that, so to speak, that I saw the other kids were doing.
We have a call coming in. Good evening. This is Urologist Speaks.
Yeah, good evening, doctor, to all the doctors in the house.
Good evening, sir.
You know, Dr. Francis, I too grew up in Black Village in the early 70s. I was telling somebody the other day when, you know, drugs and everything was rampant. But, you know, at a very early age, I made a decision that I would not take drugs, that I would not drink alcohol because, My father was an alcoholic. Most of my brothers are alcoholics. But I made a choice at an early age that was not something for me. And I didn't really come out of a structured home per se. You know, my father died when I was 10. But the other thing that I want to piggyback on is that sometimes, and most of the times, pressure of society, the society tells you what success looks like. That if you're not, you know, working a particular job, or you're not living in a particular area, or you know, if you don't have this, if you don't have the gadget, an iPhone, or this and that, then you know, or wearing Tommy or this and that, and you're basically nobody. And a lot of time, people tend to find their values in those transient things. You know, mm-hmm. you could put on all those things, you come, you take up, you know, you could take them off at night, and you're still lonely.
Yep.
So you have to know who you are, and you know, being a Christian, your values are found in Jesus Christ. He defines who you are, and not society, and so on and so forth. So a lot of people, especially even in the inner cities, you find that, you know, parents who will not buy books for the children, but they would get the latest tennis or belts or pants that cost $80, $100, and they would put it on the kids, and they refuse to purchase books or the necessary things that mm-hmm. that the child or the children need. Because why? To them, it's more important to look good to the outside world rather than to, you know, getting something in your head, so to speak. So,
I just want to say this, you know, another quote from Dr. Miles Monroe that I think is very profound is, he said this, he said, the greatest tragedy in life is not death, but a life without purpose. You know, and so, you know, if you live your life and you never discover why you're here, and you never discover what your potential is, you don't know what you're supposed to be doing, that's a real tragedy. And the tragedy in the Bahamas right now is that there are so many young people, especially, not just young people, but there are so many young people who have no idea of their purpose. And so they get, you know, many of them have died without ever figuring out who they are, why they're here, and making a meaningful contribution.
And it's not about, everything isn't about academics. You know, I think God has given each of us different abilities, different gifts. Brother Dave, you know me, if you used to be, right? But, you know, I've been a banker, I've been a teacher, but I'm a tailor, you know, I sew for a living, right? And sometimes when I open my mouth, people are shocked that, you know, an educated person like me sews. And so people tend to look down on certain professions or whatever it is. But a lot of these so-called de-average people and those and so on and so forth, that you don't have to be the sharpest knife in the box in order to take your talents. And if you're guided rightly, you know, you can. I always tell the story. I have a nephew who really was, he was almost a dunce, but he's a millionaire today, you know, just mm-hmm. based on his talents and his abilities. So it's just so important that, you know, we reach these individuals, let them know that you don't have to be the top of the class. You don't have to compete with somebody else in order to be successful in life. And success is, you know, is relative. Success to you don't have to be what other people, don't let other people define your success.
Yeah, success is not really based upon things. Success is basically when you have done the best with what God has given you. Yes. So whatever God has given you, if you have maximized it, you're successful. It doesn't matter where you are, what income you have, any of those kinds of things. You know, speaking of Black Village, Black Village was one of the places where I used to hang out. I had friends all over, but, you know, I'm very familiar with Black Village back in the day.
Okay, gentlemen, have a good
one. Thank you very much for your call. So, yeah, we talk about meaning, purpose for life. I mean, you have to realize deeply that the present moment is all you really have. You have to make the now the primary focus of your life. Life is just one day. You are born in the one day, and you must live in the one day, and one day you will die in that one day. So everything in life happens in the one day. So today is only your life. Yesterday is already dead. It's too late. Tomorrow is not born yet. Too early. So what you have to do in life is live for today. Today is life.
Yeah, let me just say this. You know, I think when I think about our purpose in life and meaning in life, I go back to the words of Jesus. You know, he said, seek first in his righteousness and everything else will be added unto you. So if you find God's purpose for your life, everything that you desire or need will be added to you. And it's not about things. You know, some people focus in on things. One of the things that Jesus said is this. He said, life does not consist of the abundance of things. So that tells you that you don't need things to enjoy life. You need life to enjoy things. And you have to put life before things. And we live in a society where things are still the king. You know, when you look at the corruption that's taking place in our country, it's all about things. It's all about people wanting a new car, wanting money in the bank, wanting this or that. And so people are pursuing things. But if you pursue life, then things become a bonus as opposed to things being the essence of life. Because things don't satisfy you. I remember the boxer, Mike Tyson, he was at some forum and somebody was talking about, you know, making money and so on. And Mike Tyson sat back and he said something that I'll never forget. He said, anyone who thinks money will make you happy has never had money.
Very true. And when we die, we can't take it with us.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the most important lessons in life, we must have an attitude of gratitude, of humility, and understand where the gift comes from. It's not ours. It has been given to us by the grace of God. So you have to do what you have with little time on this earth to help others. So on your last day, you can't take it with you. So you got to give, and mm-hmm. your legacy is that what you gave.
Yeah, yeah. You know, one of the interesting things, and I go back to the words of Jesus because I know that when it comes to understanding life, his words are the guide.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. You know, he said that life doesn't consist of things. Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. All things will be added unto you. So if we just follow these simple principles, we'll find our way, you know, and we'll find our way to success in life just by following the guidelines.
And Calvin, you working with these young persons, 9 years old, 12 years old, do you see in some of them a future disaster, criminal, almost like a runaway train that you can't stop and you're helpless to stop?
You know, I hate to say that, but yeah, there are some things, some nuances, something that you see, and hopefully what you try to do is to see if you could change that direction,
mm-hmm.
if you could change that direction. And a lot of that direction come, again, because they don't have anyone to guide them.
Right.
You know, for either good or bad. So my job is to try and to show them that there is a better way. There, you could experience a better life if you do this, if you do that, and hopefully they won't go down that road that would lead them in jail, get them killed, or have them on the streets like what we see right now. And so that's what I try to do, to identify that person that I know that I could steer in a way that hopefully they could become a good citizen, someone that the country could depend on. And that's how we build it. Because if we don't do it, as we always say, we are losing a lot of our young men. Every day we see that. I mean, I think the women seem to be, in my mind, more successful than the men. And I could be wrong, but that's my observation. Yeah.
I want to share something with you. Yeah. So this is a statistic from the National Institute of Health in the U.S. 98% of prisoners have no contact. 98%. So they have contact with their mothers, but not fathers. And this thing of fathers not being present, sometimes we don't realize how devastating that is. You have a lot of young men who grow up and there's no male role model, And the only person they can count on is their mother. I remember I went to visit a friend in prison in the U.S. And I just sat there and observed. Of all the visitors who came in, no men. It was only mothers, girlfriends,
grandmothers.
You know, grandmothers. They come in to visit the guys in prison. And so these guys are not even in contact with a male who can give them a good example. You know, so it's a real challenge. And the lack of fathers, especially present fathers, not just present physically, is really damaging for our country.
Well, you know, Pastor Dave, when I listen to the success stories of most NBA players or sports figures, most of them call their mothers.
Yeah.
I thank God for my mother.
Right.
Very few of them say, I thank God for my father.
Right.
I listen to that. I find that absolutely amazing.
Yeah, when they used to put the cameras on football players and basketball players, and they look at the camera, they say, hi, Mom. They never mentioned that. You know, so it's a real tragedy. And it's something that we have to consciously work on as a country. You know, one of the things that I decided to do a couple of years ago is to do a program called the School of Manhood. So the School of Manhood, you take young boys from ages like 7, 8, and you just teach them what it is to be a man, because they are not going to get that information. They're going to become adults and never know what it is to be a man. And you know, and a lot of young people today, they don't go to church. They're not exposed to mentors. So they never have any idea. And then we have this expectation, boy, you need to be decent. You need to be to be a law-abiding citizen. But no one has ever taught them.
But Pastor, you need to develop that program, really, because one of the things I was going to ask you is, you know, we talk about a national parenting program that we need, but certainly the school that you're thinking about for young men, we need that. Mm-hmm. And I think you ought to develop that, and I'd like to be a part of that if you develop that.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think what you highlighted was a lot that's wrong with the young people, young men, young boys in our society, is that who do they hold in the highest of esteem? Who are their role models? And it's NBA players. They're NFL players, and they don't realize the statistical almost improbability of them ever achieving that status or entering the NBA or NFL. And then they don't realize that statistics have shown that after 5 years of retirement from the NBA or NFL, 75% of these ex-athletes are bankrupt.
Yep.
So don't think that they have a life of honey and gravy. Many of them are more broke 5 years after they retire than when they first went into the profession. We have another call coming in. Good evening. This is Urologist Speaks.
Yes, good evening, Doc. Good show. And good evening to your calls, and good evening to Pastor Dave.
Thank you.
Doc, you were talking just now about role models of the young men. That's one of the points I wanted to make, because the last time I had called you, that was one of the things I spoke about in a rite of passage. Like, you know, we don't really have that in our society where young men get an idea of what it really is to be a man and what is really expected of them from society. Because when they look at society, you know, it's absent.
Yes.
And you know, it's interesting that you brought that up. But I wanted to ask Pastor Dave. Oh, Pastor Dave, I had the privilege of speaking to you a couple of years ago. I know you don't remember, but do you feel that the influence of the church, Pastor Dave, is growing? Or it's losing its influence today?
I think that the church has definitely lost influence. And it's tragic, because the church, a strong church, makes a stronger society. And what has happened over time is that the church has been the victim of many of the things that are happening in the country. You know, it's not attractive for different reasons. You know, a lot of women go to church, a lot of men don't. The programs that used to be implemented years ago, so you had like the Boys Brigade, you had the Girls Guides, the Boy Scouts, different programs like that. You had a lot of programs
That's yes, sir, because I noticed that also because there was a lady one time and she had said that more women are in church because the message is more about is emotional. It's about, you know, it's about emotion and not and not logical. It doesn't really hit with the men, but it hit with the women because it's emotion, right? But something else to Pastor Dave is that even though the church, I guess you would agree that it's gone through many changes over the years. The church has tried to, I guess, adopt, you know what I mean, like certain type of music, certain type of dress codes, all type of things the church didn't allow back then. The church allowed to try to attract people to the church, and that has also failed, all right? And the thing about it is that you had said something earlier, Pastor Dave, about when you went into the church and you saw how people were doing well in their prosperity and different things like that, and you said also that if you are living purposefully, you won't find yourself in a jail cell like an animal, right? But Daniel found himself like in a jail cell, right? John the Baptist found himself like in a jail cell. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego also found themselves in jail cells, Pastor Dave. You see, because the thing about it is that I feel as if in our time, Pastor Dave, we need a message that's so strong that people are willing to suffer for it, not see it as something that when they join it, they get benefits, but to see it as something that when they join it, they automatically take on a real struggle for this thing because it's a truth, like Daniel, like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, right? Because Dr. Miles Monroe, who I had the ultimate respect for, even though he and I don't agree in terms of which way, I agreed with many of the things that he said. And since you were talking about purpose, he said something that if you want to know what your purpose is, right, you have to see what it is that makes you angry. Right? Mm-hmm. He said, because then that means that you are here to probably solve that problem.
Right.
And he also said that the graveyard is one of the richest places in the world. So you see, I remember what he said, right, Pastor Dave?
Yes, and, yes.
And he also said this, Pastor Dave. He said that slavery is the worst thing that can ever happen to a people, Pastor Dave. That's what he said also,
mm-hmm.
You see? And why that is relevant to me, Pastor Dave, right, is because, see, and I want you to try to think about this, Pastor Dave, when you go, because, you know, this, you know, but see, Jesus was thought to come by the people to save them from the Romans, like how Moses saved the people from Pharaoh, correct?
Right.
Yeah, so you see, so we shouldn't be saying that Jesus come to save us from our sin. We should say that Jesus come to save us from our oppressor. Because see, seeing that slavery is the worst thing that has ever happened to a people, can ever happen to a people, Pastor Dave. And just recently, you know, America, Israel, and Argentina, or I think whatever, voted against it, but it was just voted the worst thing that ever happened to be experienced that, right? So, you know, so Christianity, Pastor Dave, should address that, right? And it does, because the entire message of the Bible, Pastor Dave, is about oppression and about redemption. That's why Jesus was thought to come and save the people from the Romans, you see? Because the Savior is only necessary to redeem his people from the captivity experience. You mm-hmm. understand, Pastor Dave?
Right.
So you see, when we talk about this sin, right, it don't relate to men like me. Because, the whole, they don't make sense. But when you teach it from a perspective, Pastor Dave, that I myself can see a life that I have experienced, then I can see the purpose in living, which is to redeem my people from the oppression that we have experienced, like the people in the Bible, and that we must be willing to go in the lion's den or in the fiery furnace for it. You cannot go down the wide road, Pastor Dave. In our society, Christianity, mm-hmm. without a doubt, is the wide road. Because if I put Christianity on my resume and say I go to church every Sunday, it is a bonus. But in these times, when you go the right way, it's supposed to be a scorn. Thank you very much. You have a good day.
You're welcome. Let me just make a comment on that. So the example of Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, etc., are good examples. But what you have to realize about that situation is that because they had a life of purpose, they were able to survive the challenges. So the challenges in itself are not good. But when you have character, it helps you to survive life's challenges. And that's why it's so important to understand your purpose. One of the things that when we look at what Jesus said that he came to do, it says that he came that we might have life and have it more abundantly. So that doesn't mean necessarily an easy life, but it means that what he's put on the inside you helps you to survive whatever life throws at you. In the book of Romans, it says, neither death nor life nor principalities nor things past nor things present, nothing can separate us from the love of God. And that's why we have to look at it. We have to find our purpose. We have to get connected to God and realize that through Christ, we can do anything. We can go through anything. We can survive anything. We can overcome anything.
Well, I thank you for your inspiring words, and I know that you have a very busy schedule. You're traveling to Africa to spread the good word. Any closing remarks, Mr. Calvin Green?
Well, I would, since Sunday coming is Father's Day, I'd like to wish all fathers a happy Father's Day, and I thank them for the contribution they are making in our country and in the lives of their children.
And Pastor, we are here speaking about your latest book, and you have many, Leaving the Streets, Breaking Free from Street Life and Building a Future of Purpose and Success. How can someone, a young person, find this book and turn their life around?
It's actually not officially released yet. I'm going to release it when I return. And right now it's available on Amazon. It's going to be available at my place of business, my publishing company on Robinson Road. And then it's also going to be available at Bahamas Faith Ministries or just by contacting me directly. You can contact me through Facebook, WhatsApp. So it's good. And then I'm going to be doing an official release.
Wonderful. I hope you come back when you come back from Africa.
Yes, definitely, definitely.
I'd like to say happy Father's Day, early happy Father's Day to my father, Alan Pinto, and to my uncle, Dr. Larry Davis. My closing remarks would be that life is really just 2 days, the day we are born and the day we die. In between, we have the chance to live, to learn, to love, and to grow. And if we face challenges in life, but if we make those challenges make us stronger, we will make people in our life who touch our hearts. If we meet people in our life who touch our hearts, and then someday, in some way, we will leave with the memories that stay forever. So every decision that you make is a brick in the foundation of who you become. So life is simple. It's just about finding happiness, peace, tranquility, love, and leaving this world better than when we entered it. Have a very peaceful and tranquil week, Bahamas, and thank you for giving us our time on The Urologist Speaks. Good night.
Good night.